Thanks for tuning in to the Animal Control Report podcast, where we help debunk the dog catcher stereotype. A lot of times people think it's a dog catcher when they hear about animal control officers. But here on the Animal Control Report, we change that by taking you inside the day-to-day operations of animal control officers. Not only will you hear stories of animal control officers, but you'll hear from industry experts as well. We are also part of the Keep It Humane podcast network. We have some amazing partners there, so check them out at keepithumane.com/podcast network. You can listen to all the animal control and animal welfare related podcast there. And let's continue to help people help animals. Welcome to the Animal Control Report with your hosts,
Ashley Bishop
and Daniel Snap Ettinger. How you doing,
wow,
Bishop?
That's for like a live chat.
Snap.
You don't use that on reptiles.
Snap.
Are you trying to pretend you're a king
snap.
Cobra over there?
What if I was a snapping turtle? We have a fun one.
I mean,
today.
We put you on your back. You aren't going anywhere.
It's also true. This is also true. I was also talking about snappy snares because it's snappy season. And did you know you can get a snappy snare from livetrap.com? Just go check out livetrap.com over there at the, I can't even talk, at Tomahawk Live Trap. And if you put in snap or snappy snare, you'll find some really good. I like that. I'm not a big snappy snare person, but I do like the thick one with the, like, do you know the one I'm talking about?
Yes, I know which one you're talking about. I haven't ever used that one. I like the, it's more of a metal.
Yep, they have that one.
Case
they have that one.
One
too.
Yeah.
Yep. So don't forget to use.
They got me.
If you need a new one, what's the discount code?
Snap.
No, it's keep it humane. And then you get 10% off your order at livetrap.com.
I wanted to make sure you got to say it, Dan. Only everybody expects you to say it.
Snap.
I'll get snappy.
Also, check out keepithumane.com for some cool stuff. We got, there's these challenge coins that I stole an idea from
don't admit to stealing.
No, it's fine. There was no proprietariness to it. Jefferson County Animal Control, super awesome department. I've known their director, Carla, for, geez, over probably 12, 13 years. She's amazing. And one of their ACOs posted this really cool challenge coin truck. And it looks identical to their truck. They're part of the sheriff's office. And theirs is like black and it says like sheriff on it. And people just went ham on these things because they're absolutely gorgeous. And I was like, I'm stealing that idea. So I made challenge coins in the same, what do you call that? The same essence
style?
Of style. Yeah. But I made it say animal control instead of sheriff. And then on the back, it's the logo. And then it's also help people help animals. So check those out.
Well, if anybody wants to see them, they can just go online to our Facebook page.
And they're there.
Because you posted it there.
Yeah. What's our Facebook page?
The Animal Control Report.
Thank you. Ashley Bishop, Texas version. How you doing over there?
I'm good. The weather's still weird here. You know, yesterday was beautiful. Today it's like gloomy and, you know, all the things.
It's like reverse world because you have Ashley Bishop, Wisconsin in a sundress. And then you're over there in like a triple fat goose.
Oh,
you even know what that
it's
is?
It's only 38 degrees here, Dan.
What's going on with the summer outfit then?
Easter. Oh. I just wanted to dress up nicely.
Speaking of Easter,
I'm not leaving the house. I'm just cooking.
Does it count if I take dog treats and hide them around the house and let him find them?
Hell yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There's also, actually shelters that'll put them in eggs and let the dogs go find them.
Oh, cute. Mm-hmm. Really quick before we jump in, we have Tabitha with the Humane Educators of Texas, Austin Reptile
Service
and Humane Help. You are all hats, bro.
I'm busy.
You're busy. Do you or any of the others, do you, so I do this thing. It's called, I'm going to get real personal here. And Tabitha, I'm going to get really, really personal for the show. Before bed, there's a routine, right? And like, as soon as I'm done in the bathroom, brushing my teeth, flossing, all that stuff, washing my face, taking my eyeliner off, my whatever, that good stuff. There's
and
a
now
dog.
I want to put eyeliner on Dan.
There's a dog. His name's Mooney. And he just is sitting there. So as soon as the door opens, he knows. I think this is the Pavlov thing. I don't know. Maybe. But ever since he's a puppy, he's gotten what we call nighttime crunch. And so right before bed, he gets a cookie. But he is so trained for it, he even thinks now, anytime I go in the bathroom, that he gets a nighttime crunch. And I'm like, bro, it's daylight out here. What are we talking about? So my question to all of you is, do you do anything like that with your animals that is like a routine of like fun, positive reinforcement or whatever? Or am I just
Oh,
the only weird one?
I mean, does it have to involve cookies?
Not at all. That's just
Oh
my
God, here we
no,
go with
Tabitha, that's just
Paisley.
my example.
Right. Paisley and I have a full day long routine every day.
Oh.
We have to have morning scroochies.
Scroochies.
Morning
Explain.
scroochies. Yep.
Explain. What's a scrooch?
So this is a scritch and this is a scrooch.
For those that don't know, you can see that on YouTube and or Spotify
Yes.
in the video section. Thank
It's
you.
very technical, and I have a poster in my office. I should post. Maybe I'll post this on y'all's Facebook page. But I have a poster in my office that was done by an artist here in Austin, and it has a cat getting scritches, and it says "Bitches get scritches." So yeah, so we have to be very particular. So we have morning scrooches, and then she, my Paisley, is a social eater. So if you don't know, some cats are very social eaters. So she likes for me to go in the bathroom and watch her eat her crunchies. So we have to do that every morning. And then depending on my day, which usually involves working one of my 47 jobs, I'm gone most of the day. And then when I come home at night, I watch her eat crunchies again. And then we have a big, deep, heavy makeout session in the evenings before bed
Oh, okay.
every day.
That's a different episode for the makeout, but I'm down with the scrooches. I just want a video of scroochie.
Yes, I'll have to do my cat information video. And because like I have a mathematical formula also for taming feral kittens that I teach in my ACO basic. So if you have feral, you know, like the little hissy spitty kittens,
Oh,
right?
yeah. Love
It
them.
is
I love them.
1,000 kisses per week of age. Because you got to kiss the hate out,
You
right?
got
That's how
to.
many kisses it takes, is what this is scientifically tested, right? 1,000 kisses per week of age, and those need to be applied daily. So if you have like a 2-week-old kitten, it's 2,000 kisses a day.
So, I know you very well, and I know you like to cite your sources. So
Right.
can you tell me what source,
That was
have?
my own research.
Okay, cool. Let's
That's
go.
25 years of kissing kittens.
Let's go. Here's how I'm gonna do it. We got Bishop, and then we got Bishop, right? Because the second Bishop was, that's Texas, right? Bishop.
Wow.
Great inflection there,
I'm
Dan.
still trying to figure this out.
Texas Bishop, I told you.
All right,
Texas
fine.
Bishop,
We'll do
there we go.
Texas Bishop. Ashley Bishop, Bishop, Wisconsin. What is your? Do you have anything with your big old snuggalug over there?
Not necessarily so much routine, but we have inadvertently trained him that he only drinks water out of the faucet in the bathtub.
Wait, what?
He refuses to drink out of a bowl anymore at home. And so he will sit in front of the bathroom door because we have to keep it closed because the garbage is in there, or he'll get into it. And he will sit and bark and whine and scratch at the door to have running water
He's like
at
a
the.
cat. That's cats do that shit.
But he's also a really good boy. All I have to say is, hey, Rex, it's bedtime. And like he gets up and walks over to his kennel and waits for me to open the door for him. And, but
Okay. Texas Bishop, what about you?
I got four little Rugrats running around, my four pack Chihuahuas. They all know
Oh, Jesus.
it's 9 o'clock. It's 9 o'clock, and they know it. And I'll say, who's ready for bedtime? And I have one in particular, my little potato, Ellie Mae. She's
Ellie
just.
Mae.
Ellie Mae, yeah. So she loves to bark and just hop around on the bed, and all four of them know it's straight to bedtime. So, and I will be that person. Honestly, all my Chihuahuas are great. I've been in this industry long enough to know when they're assholes. And I don't have any of those. I've lucked out very much, and they're all rescues.
So I have to tell you though, my big old 80-pound bully breed of a, oh my God, this dog's gonna eat me, had a pack of four dachshunds. that he was afraid of at doggy daycare.
no.
Also, Tabitha, I think you'll get a kick out of this because we're breed people.
Breed snobs.
And I was teaching, I just shout out to Arizona Animal Control Association. I was just there in Laughlin, Nevada, just across the border. Such a fun time. And I'm teaching the class, and this came up. I knew there was a joke there, and but I didn't know. I didn't go into it. And I had a wire hair dachshund on one slide, and then I had a Havanese on the bottom slide. And I knew there was a joke. And so they got the wire hair dachshund, but I think they didn't get the Havanese. And I said, you know, it'd be cool is if we mix the Havanese with the dachshund. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, where's the joke? Where's the joke? And then it hits me. And I'm like, think about it. Then you'll have a wiener. Have a wiener. Okay, cool. Okay.
Wow.
I love it. I might steal that because I have my
Have a
breed class
wiener.
coming up next week.
You
Or
should steal
I mean a
it.
couple weeks. I'm gonna
You
steal that
should
one.
steal it because it's fucking
Yeah.
great.
Yep.
And then they looked at me and they were like, I think that's funny, but he's just an idiot, so we're not gonna laugh at him. But we had a good time. They're such a cool. I'm sad I missed part of it because they have a lot of tribal officers there. And they do, and it's on tribal land where we go, and the casino is and stuff. And they last year when I was there, they had this really cool I don't know how what it would be called, but they did a live kind of music chant thing. It was so cool, and I missed it this year, and I was kind of bummed about that. So
Wow.
hopefully, if I go back next year, I can be there for the whole time because I've been to some conferences in life, and I've never experienced that except there, and it's pretty magical to see it. So all
Should we
right.
slither our way in?
Wow.
That
Wow.
was good.
Yeah, take it away, Bishop.
Well, why am I taking it away? I think Tabitha needs to take it away because she's here to talk about one of her. It's newer to you, isn't it? I mean, you've
Sort
been.
of. Yeah, not cats. Not talking about
No.
cats, surprisingly. Yeah.
Cats don't usually slither.
Well, really
Cats don't
quick,
usually.
I
No.
think though you're a regular on the show and you
Yeah.
sponsor the supplemental report.
Right.
We still should let people know who the heck you are, because what if it's their first time listening? They're like, why do they know Tabitha? Like, she's like a best friend. Well, because we've known Tabitha for a long time, but you're in Texas. You are Texas Humane Educator. Wow. But you just take it away because I
I was
can't.
gonna
I'll just
let
take
her
I'll
do it,
handle
Dan. I was gonna let her do it.
it. Let her do it.
Despite the fact Dan has known me for so long, he cannot remember any of my 47 jobs. So my name is Tabitha. I am co-owner of Humane Educators of Texas, where we travel all over the country doing trainings for animal control officers, police officers, shelter staff, veterinarians, things like that. I'm also, separate from that, the owner of Austin Reptile Service, which is what I'm here to talk about today. Austin Reptile Service is a company that has been around for over 20 years. It was owned by a man named Tim Cole, who was a very dear friend of mine for many, many years. Was a herpetologist here in Texas. He passed away kind of unexpectedly in August of 22, and I purchased the company from his family to kind of just keep a little bit of his legacy going. So now I run it, and we do all kinds of weird things. So we do a lot
I
of
do.
educational events. We do birthday parties, film and television shoots, photo shoots. Train utility companies, things like that. So, but one of the things that is a big focus of mine for Austin Reptile Service, because I come from a career of animal cruelty investigations and things like that, is with Austin Reptile Service, a little bit also with Human Educators, but I really focus a lot of my time on helping shelters and helping field officers who are going out on exotic animal cruelties. So whether they're needing me to serve as an expert witness, if they need me to consult in an investigation capacity, if I'm pulling for rescue for we actually just had quite a large seizure in South Texas a couple weeks ago, and there were some exotics pulled in there. So I always reach out to those situations and just offer my services if I need to pull anyone, and things like that. But the other thing that I'm actually quite passionate about this right now. I'm really trying to get information to shelters on how to house reptiles I call my class housing reptiles in a mammal world, right? So animal shelters are built for dogs and cats. They're not built for reptiles. And all shelters get reptiles, maybe not every day, right? But they all get the occasional ball python that was left at someone's apartment, or an iguana, or whatever it is.
Alligator.
The 36 leopard geckos or chameleons or
Right. And nobody knows what to do. And I get these panicked phone calls all the time of like, we just got, even it could be something as simple as a ball python, right? Which I call pet rocks, but they're like, we don't know what to do with this, and they're panicking and oh God. And it's so everybody knows that reptiles can be more complicated because they have heating requirements and humidity and things like that. And so I'm trying to simplify this process for shelters so that they can be prepared and ready to go
Do
when
you
these guys
show
come in.
how to make a drip system out of an IV bag from the vet clinic?
I can,
Yes. Because if that's all you
but
have, right? Like what are your
right.
options? Okay, cool. That's
It is, but usually
fantastic.
with chameleons, who are the ones that typically need the drip systems, I usually tell shelters part of my kind of training with shelters when I'm trying to train them on how to take care of reptiles is not necessarily to set them up for long-term care, right? Because they're not set up for that. So sometimes I tell them your best option is to reach out to a rescue, an exotic rescue, and just let them house the animal during the adjudication process or whatever. And with chameleons, that listen, I don't even do chameleons. I can't, they'd scare me. That not the animal, the care scares me. So,
Well, just for our listeners too, it's Austin Reptile Service. Again,
dot
Austin
net.
Rest. Yeah, I was gonna get that because I always mess up the
Okay.
dot. I always mess up the dot with
Yeah.
you.
Everybody does. It's fine.
But this is dot net. So Austin Reptile Service dot net, or you could just Google Austin Reptile Service. One of the things we'll get back to it that just jumps out to me on the page, and the pictures are absolutely amazing, is you do weddings, and we'll have to get back to that. So.
Yeah, I it's funny when I'm out in public and people go, oh, what do you do for a living? I usually just say I'm in sanitation, so they don't ask questions because it's really hard to explain what my 47 jobs are. But I did bring a guest appearance.
Okay.
I did. I brought out my very sweet Knox.
So is that a rat? What is it?
Ooh.
Rat snake?
This is a Mexican
Rat.
black king snake,
Okay.
and he's very sweet, so he decided to come say hi.
He's
He's
cool.
handsome. You
Yeah,
know,
he's a
I'm
good
not
boy.
normally a snake person, but he's pretty.
And his name's Knox. You'll appreciate that.
Yes, I love that,
Yes. Being a
actually.
Harry
Dan's
Potter
like,
fan.
why?
Yeah, he came to me from a guy who owned him his whole life. He's loved this snake, but he was moving to Alaska and was kind of concerned about having a snake in Alaska. He didn't think he would have the
That's
ability to
fair.
keep a setup for him. So now he's one of my program animals. So he goes and does, he did, he went and did the shelter event yesterday and lets kids play with him and hold him and things like that. He also does a lot of photo shoots with my all white leucistic ball python. They like the
That's really cool.
photographers really like the black and white
Come
together.
on, you need to name that one Lumos.
Well, the leucistic ball python is my daughter's, and she really likes irony, so she named him Ebony.
Oh,
I like that.
Yeah,
I
so
like
he's Ebony, and
that. Instead of
this is
ivory. Yeah.
right,
Yeah,
yes.
that's pretty damn
Yeah.
good. I wonder where she gets her sense of humor from.
From our father.
So where can we see you next in person?
I mean, aside from the academy, I will be I'm gonna have, well, Humane Educators of Texas, we have a booth at Texas Unites, which is in April in Austin. We will be at the TACA conference in November, and we will I think,
HSUS in May.
oh yes, I'll be at HSUS in May. And I think I'm not 100% sure. I may be at the Louisiana conference as well.
It's
Louisiana Intercultural.
Louisiana.
Louisiana.
You mean Louisiana? Also, are
Waka.
there any native snakes in Alaska? Because they do get a summertime there.
That's a good question. I am not an Alaska snake
We're
expert,
gonna
just a
find out.
Texas snake expert. Yeah, you
So
have to ask Dr.
speaking of
Google.
not being an Alaska snake expert.
Yeah.
I would assume that based on the contact information that's on your website, anybody can call you and ask questions about no matter where they're from.
Yeah, absolutely. The phone number that's on my website is a cell phone, so people are free to text me pictures of snakes if they just need a quick ID. I do have a free snake ID guide on my website. It's only applicable to Texas snakes. He's going to be an earring today. He's excited. It's only applicable to Texas snakes. And if people are going to text me pictures of snakes, I just ask, please only Texas snakes or snakes that you see in Texas. Because I had somebody texting me pictures from Costa Rica a couple weeks ago, and I was like, it's interesting, it's cool. I got no idea. There's people way smarter than me for that. So I
I
just
googled
specialize
it.
on Texas.
I googled it. So Alaska, along with one other of the 50 states, does not have any native.
Oh.
What is the second?
Hawaii.
It is, yeah, Hawaii.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah.
Isn't
Ooh,
that fun?
that tickles. It went right in my ear. Oh.
Gosh, Tabitha, I wish,
Yeah.
I don't know why we didn't think of you. We had a really large seizure probably around September of 22 of
Yeah.
all kinds of stuff. We had baboons and all
Yeah.
kinds of stuff. And I
Oh,
don't know why.
that's my favorite venomous species, actually, is baboons. And I have a friend who has he breeds them, and so he has a couple of baboons, and he named his biggest baboon Tabitha after me, because that's my favorite. It's my favorite venomous species because I mean they're beautiful, but they have the largest fangs of any venomous species on the planet, right? So they're huge. But if you've ever seen a baboon viper, they don't look like they're alive because they're so fat and lazy that they almost turn two-dimensional, right? They just melt. Like, think of like when you put a Pyrenees on a leash and they melt, right? That's what it does. And so it just melts, but they're incredibly fast strikes. So I just feel like they're just being lazy, living their best life, eating some Twinkies, right? Being lazy. But if you push them, they'll cut a bitch. And I really identify with this. And I feel like I am a baboon viper, and so they're my favorite species.
Have you ever been hitting by a bitten by a venomous snake?
I've never been bitten by venomous. I don't free handle venomous. I
Okay.
don't encourage or condone free handling venomous. But having been bit by non-venomous tens of thousands of times, happens almost every day.
Because
As a
you
matter of
deal
fact,
with them, though, do you keep the anti-venom? Do you have or
no, it's not legal in the U.S. to hold on to your own anti-venom without
Oh.
heavy, heavy, heavy permits.
Got it.
I know that there are some people that will like go to Mexico and get antivenin and keep it on hand. But no, and I no longer keep venomous species. I used to, but when I was purchasing insurance on my animals, and you tell them that you want to take rattlesnakes into libraries, that was a number I was not prepared for. So I donated a lot of my venomous species into some local zoos and facilities here in Texas and private collections, things like that. But
Is
no
it
antivenin.
legal in Texas to own privately venomous snakes?
It is, yeah. You have to be permitted if you have a non-indigenous species. So if you wanted to own a baboon viper, you would have to be permitted for that. The permitting process here in Texas, very simple. You just go down to Academy or Walmart and you purchase your non-indigenous snake permit for $25.
So I could have a black
Very
mamba.
simple. You could. Yes, you could.
Wow. See,
Okay.
and we actually, when we revamped our ordinance, our local ordinance, we ban any kind of venomous snakes. Because, well, I mean, we've gone into people's houses. It's legal in my area to own up to a 10-foot alligator. So, and up to a 10-foot any kind of snake that is non-venomous. So, but
Yeah,
I
that's
wanted. Texas really only regulates the big constrictors, so the five big constrictors that are found in the world, so reticulated pythons, Burmese, the African rock pythons, and there's five or six of them that like the big, big, big constrictors, and then non-indigenous venomous. That's all that you have to have a permit for here, as far as snakes go. That's all you have to have a permit for. So it's pretty crazy.
Yeah,
Pretty
we learned
crazy.
a lot. We learned a lot in that seizure because not
Yeah.
only were there that it was rough. I mean, the walls were crawling in this home. There was children involved.
Yeah.
There was we also removed 130 some rats and mice. So it was a rough case overall. I learned a lot. It was my first major seizure as a supervisor, so we learned quite a bit.
Yeah, and I think it's these cases that really do kind of open everybody's eyes because I think the average ACO or the average shelter worker goes through their career and thinks like, oh, I mean, yeah, we get the occasional ball python, right, on an abandonment or a surrender, but they don't ever think of like, if I go work a, you know, for if I'm working at a local shelter that's small, right, I go and do a 10, 20 dog or 10, 20 cat seizure, that's going to be a big seizure for my small shelter, right? But nobody thinks in terms of exotics. The typical exotic owner owns not only a lot of exotic reptile species, but the food as well. And so you're looking at like one of the most famous cases, this was many, many years ago, but one of the most famous cases here in Texas was up in the Dallas area, and their total number of seizure was something in the realm of like 28,500 animals, right? And that's mostly rats, mice,
Feeders.
because you have to count every mouse pup, right? You have to count every rat, all
Yep.
of the roaches they were breeding. Like, so it's, and so people don't think of that. So if, you know, like, especially, I know everybody probably who's listening has attended some sort of cruelty lectures where they always talk about, like, what is that threshold for a high volume seizure? And the answer is always, like, whatever's going to overwhelm your resources, right? There's not like a set number, but even a small exotic seizure can be quite overwhelming to a small shelter, right? I did one almost 2 years ago now at a shelter close to us, and it was a horrible cruelty case, and there were cats and dogs, of course, but they also had four bearded dragons, four leopard geckos, a whole bunch of birds, which I do not do, but a whole bunch of birds. They had a tegu, they had a chameleon, they had bunnies. Like, it was, and they were just like, where do we even begin, right? Because we don't even know what to do with any of this. So they called me. This is just an example of one of the things I do with these cases, is they called me. I was not involved in the investigation process. I came out to evaluate the animals for them, to help them decide which ones were maybe to the point of needing to be euthanized. This was after the seizure hearing, so we didn't have to worry about that. Which ones needed to go ahead and be euthanized, which ones were safe to, you know, go on to the vet, maybe get some rehab and some care, and then help them find placement with rescues and private homes for, and actually I kept one of the bearded dragons, and she's one of my program animals now. So yeah, it can be the whole world of exotic cruelty, it can be pretty overwhelming, even for, I think, for seasoned officers, right? Like somebody who works their career, they've done loads and loads of cruelty investigations, or just loads and loads of welfare checks. Maybe they haven't done a ton of cruelties, but then they walk into that first one and you're looking at 50, 60, 100 snakes, right? And you're like, oh God, I've forgotten everything I've ever been taught.
What everything is going to be different based on what types of creatures we're talking about going in and having to deal with. But if you had to give, let's say, five basic items to have in your vehicle to be able to handle some of these animals, what would they be?
That's a good question.
So definitely, a lot of the stuff you'll need for exotics, most officers probably already have. So a big thick set of like either welding gloves or like my favorite, the tomahawk gloves. I don't have any here with me right now, but the tomahawk gloves.
Did you get those from Tomahawk Live Trap by any chance?
I did get them from Tomahawk Live Trap, but I used my discount code.
Oh, what is your discount code?
It's D. I'm gonna tell you what it all stands for, but here's the initials. It's DC IHTFC, and that stands for discount code I hate to have at the fan club. Also, we'll get you 10% off. Yeah, so a good thick pair of gloves. Definitely either snake hook or snake tongs. And a bucket, of course, right? Something that you can, because if you're coming across venomous, please do not try and pick up a venomous snake with gloves. Use equipment. Or if you don't know what species you're dealing with, especially if you've got, you know, a room full of 100 snakes and you don't know, they don't mark them correctly, there's nothing saying it's venomous. Depending on your state, there may not even be requirements for locking or labeling. So making sure that if you can't readily identify it, having some sort of equipment. And then bags. Honestly, bags are one of my favorite things. I just, anytime pillowcases get donated to shelters, I tell those shelters, because most shelters just throw them away, right? I tell them, please don't throw them away. Send them to me. I will use them. Because pillowcases are a great option, especially for snakes, but even for some lizard species. It's really a nice, it's safe for them. They're not going to hurt themselves. They do need to be turned inside out. Somebody's going to come for me in the comments. Turn the pillowcases inside out. Because you don't want the little strings that are inside. You don't want those snakes getting wrapped up in those. So turn the pillowcase inside out, but you can put the snake in there, the lizard in there, whatever. And when you tie it in a knot, they can't get out. They feel safe because snakes generally like to feel secure, right? They like to be in small environments. And then it's going to be dark, but they can still breathe. And they're not visually seeing things that are scaring them, right? They're only really going to see light and dark differences in there. So it brings their stress down, level down a little bit. Those are probably the big things I would say. Oh, everyone should always have. Yeah.
Well, now I know a couple of things I gotta go get.
Don't mess
Talking.
up. I said this in class unintentionally. Don't confuse snake tongs for snake thongs, okay? Just whatever you do in the bedroom is up to you, but when you say it in class, it hits different. So,
Right.
yeah,
I
snake.
would agree with that statement. Don't
I feel
confuse the
like you
two.
might own snake thongs, but we don't need to go there.
I do not want to be clear on record. I do not. Do not.
If I believe that,
Do not.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That went off
Do
a
I know
cliff
you?
quick.
I
Well,
mean,
hey, it could have went in a hole quick like a snake, but we're just gonna keep it moving, so.
You guys do a lot of different classes, and I know you guys have your home base in Texas. Do you guys travel for your classes?
I do. A lot of it's my travel with Austin Reptile Service. My travel with Humane Educators, yeah, we travel everywhere, right? My travel with Austin Reptile Service is largely based on what is that person or agency looking for. If they're wanting me to travel with my 30-something reptiles, it's gonna be a lot more to coordinate, right? I have done it. I definitely do travel with them, but it requires a lot more on my part because I have to have all the setups with me. I have to travel with heating for some of them, and it's a little bit more of a coordinated effort. If somebody's just wanting a general like snake ID and safety class or something like that, those are a lot easier for me to do on the road. So yeah, I mean, I do travel with and without them. Just depends on the situation. I mostly do most of my stuff in and around Central Texas with the whole crew. So they all come with me, the lizards, the tortoises, the snakes, and they come with me. And depending on if we're doing like a kids event, a community event where there's adults and kids, or if I'm doing like when I teach utility companies, just depending on who the audience is, varies which animals I take as well. So we got a whole system of crews and there's the fun crew and the professional crew and the film and industry crew. So there's a whole bunch of everyone's got labels.
All right, I want to get
All
to the
right, good.
weddings really quick because it's on the
Oh yes.
website. I'm
Yes.
guessing that's been part of the company for a long time because some of those pictures are in like they're just so good. So is that something that he started before like passed and then you're just keeping it going or is that was that
Well, so the
yeah.
weddings, the wedding, I be clear, one, I've done one wedding.
Okay.
I have no idea if Tim did a lot of weddings or not. He never told me about a lot of weddings,
Okay.
and he also never told me about that wedding. What that wedding was after Tim had passed, and I was going through his emails trying to find what bookings he had already done, so if I could
Sure.
work them or reschedule them or whatever.
Yeah.
And I thought I had everything handled between me and the web designer. We had gone through everything, and I thought we had everything handled. And one day I get an email from this lady, and she's like, "Hey, so I just heard that something had happened to Tim. I'm just reaching out because we booked him for a wedding this fall, and I either need to know that the snakes are coming or I need a refund." And I was like,
Sure, yeah.
"Okay. Well, I'm not going to refund you, even though I didn't get the money." So I was like, I guess we're doing a wedding. And so she had paid him some, I don't even know what. And we took six snakes down there, including the big 7-foot boa named Sequina. We took six snakes down there and we were the cocktail hour.
How cool is that?
It was one of the weirdest but most fun events we've ever done.
I feel like you should do that at Taka this year. Just saying.
A wedding or snakes?
Just the snakes. I don't think anybody's getting married at Taka, but you know.
Probably not. Yeah, I haven't heard yet if I got picked up, but I one of the classes that I did put in for Taka to speak on is my Sheltering Reptiles in a Mammal World.
Oh,
So
so they'll be there if you do get picked up. Yeah.
yeah, if I get selected for that one, I probably will bring some of the reptiles with me. And then we'll be talking about that in there.
Okay.
So the wedding thing was just a one-off, but I mean, I'll do it. I do okay, the weirder things that I do honestly are the like film and television shoots. So like last year I did a photo shoot for a girl that owns a company that sells like the press-on nails, like very fancy high-end. I'm cheapening this, but like very fancy high-end nails. And so she booked some of my snakes. And so some of my snakes are now on hottopic.com. So like we do weird fun things like that. And I'm gonna be going probably in May to do there's a guy who's attending UT,
Okay.
University of Texas Film School right now. And he's doing a film project and he's wanting to book one of my tortoises for 3 days of film shoots. So those are the weirder things that I do.
What is the oldest creature you have to that you know age of?
That would probably be, well, I just recently gave my boa. She's now retired, right? And I gave her to my friend Shia. So she lives with Shia now. Sukuina was between 18 and 19 years old. She still is. She's fine. She's just living in retirement. But the ones that I still have on hand would I'm guessing my oldest is my rat snake named Mr. Grumpy.
Mr. Grumpy.
And he's a jerk and he hates everybody. And he does my bite demos. So when I train utility companies or when I do my animal control officer herpetology class for them, I do a bite demo. So I pull Grumpy out. He bites me multiple times, usually dozens and dozens of times. And it really it's to show everyone that it's not the end of the world, right? Because most people have built up in their head what they think a snake bite is. And when they see
Right.
me get bit, and they go, "Oh, that's it? Oh, yeah, that's it." And it brings them down a lot. They're like, "Oh, that's not as scary as I thought it would be." So he's my old man. He's about 15 years old.
How old
I
do they
feel it.
get?
So most of the snakes that I have, not all of them, but most of the snakes I have in captivity can live anywhere between 20 and 35 years. So
Wow,
yeah,
impressive.
they're gonna be around for a while.
Well, speaking about being around for a while, it's time to transition into the supplemental report. Officially named by someone named Tabitha about a couple of weeks ago from the Humane Educators of Texas. It's
Yeah,
crazy.
she sounds crazy.
She all these jobs she has all this creativity. Check out humaneeducatorsoftexas.com on your search bar, humaneeducatorsoftexas.com for all that fun stuff. And to Texas Bishop, take it away. It's a supplemental report.
Well, I'm going to be honest, Dan. I was really busy with family and stuff, so I don't know that I'm super prepared, but I can definitely come up with something right off
Well, I like that. That's how we do it
the
here on the Animal Control Report.
And I was thinking about, what we do on a daily basis, at least for our small little entity here. What is it that you guys do to keep your staff motivated? I think with, ACO Appreciation Week coming up, what is it that we can do to, combat the obviously compassion fatigue that everybody suffers with, I'm sure. But also, having to explain, that the customers that we deal with, that they are just as passionate as you are about their problem that you are at your job. How to explain that to where people just like, well, no, that's not it is what it is, but to keep them motivated and, want to help the community, want to help the animals, I think is kind of what I want to talk about because I feel like we're all struggling right now, at least in my department, with, how we're getting back to COVID after COVID times, we're getting back to being busy. I mean, we've had so many bites, y'all. I mean, it's been insane. From one to two bites a week, we're getting like five or six now. So we have been inundated with all of that and just chasing people. So what are some of your tips and tricks on how to keep your people motivated and, really wanting to make this a career and keep on top of things?
I
Dan, I'm
think,
going to let you start.
yeah, I think I'm going to first speak to some of the things that were for me in my career that were unmotivating, and how I was, how I've been able to use that now in a way to like really be empathetic and, just aware kind of as a management style, being in a leadership role. I used to have this boss that would call me on my day off to, for like the most minor error things, like, you put this in chameleon wrong. I'm like, okay, like, you're calling me on my day off to tell me that? Like, how about just send me an email and we can talk about it when I get back, right? Like, on my day that I'm working. And it created so much anxiety every time I would see his phone number pop up on my caller ID, because I'm like, what did I do now? What did I do now? What did I do now? And so one of the things that I've done, and this, it also went into like, there were a lot of emails that I'd come back to work for, and then there would never, there wouldn't be any sort of like context behind it. It would just be like, fix this, or you did this wrong. It, there was not a lot of like acknowledgement of good. It was always the acknowledgement of you messed something up. And so now what I really try to do intentionally, so I work a schedule where I'm off half the week, and the other officers that I supervise work the other half of the week. So I only see them on their Friday, right? If that makes sense. Because their Friday is my Monday. So what I've done is I do have to send them emails throughout the week, because that's just, you know, a way to keep track of what's going on and like all that stuff. But what I've really done is created an environment that I call them on their Monday, and we just go through some of the email, like, just to provide context. So instead of me calling them on their day off to ask them questions about work, I would rather me call them on my day off, and really be supportive of whatever it is that, you know, we have to go through. So that way it's like, they're not waiting until their Friday, maybe. And I can't speak for them, but maybe with some anxiety or just not understanding the whole thing. So I try to really make myself available on their Monday, to have some of that context sharing and guidance, or just good feedback. Hey, good job on this. I got a phone call and just wanted to tell you that that customer was really pleased with how you treated them, et cetera. So that's really important to me as a supervisor. And, you know, just acknowledging that like their personal time is their personal time, and I'd rather sacrifice mine to make sure that they're not stressing at work waiting for me to get back to them.
Same. Yeah, I agree. You know, I try to make myself available when I'm not at work, even if I'm on vacation, you know, to make sure that they know they can call me for anything, you know, regardless of, you know, what chain of command we have, or if somebody's stepping in for me while I'm there. So definitely to be available at all times is super important.
I counter that, though, with needing to have the break from work. Needing to have that work-life balance. I would easily say I was getting burnt out prior to my surgery in November from a work-related injury. Mm-hmm. And I'm a department of one, so I don't have a whole lot that I can kind of contribute to this, but I would say that having the time away from the job, because I haven't really done my job since November, has reinvigorated me into wanting to do more. Having that recognition, like Dan said, not always having it be negative things that you're being talked to about. When you are off, having that time off, having that time away. But one of the things that I've been wanting my department, because I work for a police department, but I'm the redheaded stepchild. So I'm completely separate from my department, although I'm in my department. And one of the things that I've recently been trying to bring up to the department heads is I go into the same houses that the officers do. I see a lot of the same things, sometimes worse things. I have officers tell me all the time that they can't imagine doing what I do. And that to me means, okay, well, then maybe we should be looking into debriefing or having some kind of mental health. Our officers have to check in with a counselor once a year. And I've brought it up to them. That should be the same for me. That should be the same for our records department, who is having to read through all of the reports, who's having to watch all the videos. So that mental health aspect of, you know, just keeping everybody healthy in that way can do a lot for morale, I think.
For sure. And I didn't even think about that. OG Bishop, you know, just, you know, all the, you know, everybody that has to come across everything that we see, you know, I speak a lot to, you know, I'm grateful enough to have a very great relationship with our prosecutor. You know, she's really fantastic. You know, I can't even imagine she gets it from both sides, from us and PD. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't even think about that. It's great perspective, honestly, to really see everybody outside, you know, even our lawyer team too. Our city lawyers are really great about asking questions to us and vice versa. So, you know, we're very lucky in that perspective of, you know, that leadership. But yeah, for sure. I didn't even think about that. You know, everybody who has to look at all of our stuff, read our stuff, listen to us as well of procedure and whatnot. What about you, Tabitha? What do you think? What do you think, you know, how can we help morale in our industry overall when, you know, sometimes it's just rough? It's rough.
Yeah, this is something,
pun intended. Sorry.
This is something that that Kelly and I are very focused on with Human Educators, but I mean, the crux basically of the reason that we launched our nonprofit of Human Help is to bring mental health support to animal welfare, right? Because we are in this vacuum, right? And now that, you know, with all the studies coming out that that animal welfare's divorce and suicide rates are now equal to, and in some cases exceeding, mainstream law enforcement, we're in a bad situation. Like, this is a crisis of the highest level. And I mean, all of the things, right? I'm not going to beat a dead horse, right? Like, everybody knows, take care of yourself, be an advocate for yourself. But one of the things I found, kind of what, touching on what Dan said from the leadership perspective, one of the things that I changed back, thank God I don't have to manage anyone but snakes these days. But one of the things that I did when I was a sergeant is I learned a lot, and I changed one key aspect of my leadership style, and it's something that I still teach today, and that is to empower your employees. So everybody in my department used to joke that I built a Tabitha army, right? Because all my ACOs were little mini Tabithas. They would spit out the same answers that I would. But I didn't hide anything from them. I didn't have anything that they couldn't do, right? So not only does that build their confidence, which builds some morale, it makes them proud of their job because they can do all these things. It takes me off this pedestal, right? But the other thing that it really did for me as a supervisor, take note, supervisors, my phone rang less because my people didn't need to call me, right? They knew the answers because I didn't hide anything from them. I made sure that they got the training that would take care of it. I made sure that they had the tools that they needed. We have agencies that I'm not going to call any names out, but we have agencies that we work with where literally things like dangerous dog investigations, cruelty investigations, whatever it is, their team is not allowed to touch that. They're not allowed to work any of these cases. And so when I'm getting them to come into training, I'm like, you've been an ACO in the state for over 10 years. How is it that you've never heard of dangerous dog investigations or whatever the situation is, right? And they're like, we were never allowed to do that. And to me, one, that's just a sign of an insecure leader who's keeping things from their team, right? You should be wanting to train your replacement. But it really does make a more cohesive team. Everybody works better together. Everybody trusts everybody, right? There's not this sense of like, well, I've got this skill that you don't, right? We've all got it all, right? I make sure everybody is equal in that playing field. And again, my phone just rang less, which was nice. But I agree with you guys. I agree with OG Bishop that you, not only do you need to take time for yourself, right? You need to allow others to do that as well, right? if I do actually like your style, Dan, of where you set aside one specific day of like, it's my day off, but this is what, we've set this up. I think that that's different than just being like, oh, call me 24/7.
Correct. And they
Because,
know that. Yeah. They know that
yeah,
to
because you have to
expect that.
model that, like, I need time off too, even though I'm the boss, right? I need time off too, and model that for them, right?
Can
Because
I
like
also, yeah.
Kelly tells the famous story of when she was in labor with her daughter, right? Like
Uh-huh.
active labor. And her boss called her for a question on a
I
case.
remember hearing this story.
Right. And she
I
always
got
says,
cool.
should he have called? No. But should I have answered?
No.
No.
I wasn't in labor, but I was on maternity leave like within the first week or two of having my twins.
Yeah.
And I was getting calls about, okay, we've got these five cases. What do we do?
I literally just a week ago, I was teaching a class. And it broke my heart, actually. I got kind of, I think, a little too passionate, we'll call it, with this poor ACO. But she was telling me that she was out on medical leave because she had had a heart attack, and she was on medical leave, and there had been a case, the SWAT standoff and whatnot, and there was a dog running loose, and they called her while she was out on medical leave for a heart attack. And I was like, why?
Wow, that's
Why?
ridiculous.
They shouldn't have called, but you shouldn't have answered. We have to advocate for ourselves. We have to advocate for each other. Stop calling people on their days off. Stop. Even the things, I get this a lot. People go, oh, I don't ever call my coworkers on their day off. But if I get a cute dog, I want to text them a picture. If I get a cute cat, I want to text them a picture. If we finally picked up, Fido, the dog that's been running for 6 months, I want to tell them. Don't even send that stuff. Tell them when they get back.
Last thing I'll say about that, Texas Bishop. Is I think accountability goes both ways. And so I
Agreed.
expect my team, or our team, I should say, to really, if I screw something up, bring it to my attention. And I'm the type, I've worked for bosses that can't take accountability. And I'm the type that's like, look, hey, I did mess that up. Let's work at it together. Or thank you for bringing that to my attention. I'll make the correction. And I don't try to make excuses. I just try to say, like, yeah, like, that's my mistake. Like, I have all accountability here. And I think that goes a long way because I'm not perfect. And in order to continue to grow, you have to be able to take that feedback, not just from your boss, but from your subordinates in that aspect. Like, they should be comfortable and able to say, hey, have we ever thought about doing it this way? And so I really try to embody that. I'm probably less of a disciplinarian as I am more of a just like not a friend but like somebody that I feel like I can be approachable and you can come to me with anything. That's kind of how I play my role in leadership, and I think that's how I would want to be approached by my supervisors, and so I try to embody that to the staff that I get to mentor or manage, etc.
For sure. I'm the same way. Before I took over, leadership was very much like that. Like, no, you have to call me every time you do something, I mean, at that point, just like, how are you supposed to learn and do your job if you're having to go capture answers all the time? And like I tell everybody, I'm part of the team just because my name has, supervisor behind it doesn't mean anything. I make mistakes just like everybody else. And if I mess up, I forget things. I'm getting old. Like I forget things all the time. Like just hey, Ashley, you forgot something, or hey, you told me to do it this way, but you did it the old way, even though we changed it. And I very much make that a point to say I'm not perfect just because I'm supervisor. I can still learn. And if I make a mistake, call me out. Because it helps everybody at the end of the day, not just me.
Love it.
Yeah.
I'd work for you.
I'm learning. I feel like still very much still learning after 5 years, I think, doing this. Personnel is probably the hardest thing that I've had to learn and kind of get everything to be cohesive. It's been difficult, but we're getting there. My team's fantastic.
I keep getting asked this question. It's weird. What do you like most about your job? And it's always goes back to being able to help the people, help the crew, and indirectly help people and animals through that, right? Because like, your leadership, your guidance, your mentorship, your support, etc., and accountability, like making sure that we're doing our job correctly, does again indirectly or directly help the community, help people, but you're also helping the staff. And I really, man, it would be so cool to see a day where like some of the people that you supervised are in the world just doing great things, whether it's still in animal welfare or other. Like, I think that would be one of the biggest, I don't know, compliments is like knowing that you helped somebody get to where they wanted to be, whether it's in animal welfare or somewhere else, but you provided that guidance. So,
For sure. For
yeah.
sure. I know, I think all my past supervisors as well, I'm not here because of me. They helped me a lot. Or, people like y'all on this call, Tabitha, Dan, Ashley, it's, we get to look up to people who are paving the way for all of us and to hopefully make this industry, awesome, more awesome than what it already is.
Well, I know Tabitha's reading a book to somebody who paved the way for all of us. His name was Henry Berg. He's a leader in some ways that he probably doesn't know. So shout out to him and 150 some years ago. But we have that impact. So any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
Nope.
Okay, thanks for listening. Check out keepithumane.com. Check out the website. Austin, wow, AustinReptileService.net. I'm good here. AustinReptileService.net. You can also check
That
out
what?
.net. It's .net. You can
No.
also check out HumaneEducatorsOfTexas.com. I got all the links for you. And don't forget HumaneHelp.org. So we got all of them covered. .net, .com, .org. In that order, you can check them out. And just keep being an advocate for what you do. We love hearing these stories. ACO Week's right around the corner, or well, this air after ACO Week. This might air after or during, I don't know, but it's here. We appreciate everything that everyone does, and as always, thanks for listening, and let's continue to
Help people.
help animals and keep it humane.